conversations, great conversations. So to start off the afternoon, what we want to do is I want to draw your attention to the PowerPoint that's up on the questions that we and to our staff in particular put together that are meant to be a kind of a digest of a capturing of the conversation that that we have had, as well as where they would like this advisory group to go. Please, yes.
Okay, so I was just trying to recap, and before we talk about this slide, think a little bit about summarizing what I thought I heard over the first half of the session. And I walked away thinking that we as a committee are sort of tasked with three domains of work. And the first one I thought of was it's to come up with some overarching principles, perhaps some position statements. And the notes I took were, one, potentially all prioritized measures should be stratified, that all measures coming up for recertification should be stratified, but also thinking about how disparities might be distinct entities within institutions, and therefore the uptake of measures may vary by institutions and systems. So that one of our charges is to think of some broad position statements such as those. And then separate from that is really perhaps criteria development more than measure identification per se in the other two domains, which was thinking about a starter set around the existing measures that we're sort of calling the 700 right now. And then thinking about criteria for sentinel measure development. And those ideas that might be new, but within a context of ability to implement successfully, uptake, be actionable and feasible. But I just wanted to make sure that that was sort of the consensus of the group as to where we were headed into the afternoon, and if I'm off, then to be sort of redirected back on track.
Okay, if I could just clarify something. We're going to get to issues of stratification and some of these principles when we get to the long list of questions that's on the second page of the agenda. So I agree that we need to come up with some principles on what we need to, what our expectations are for reporting and how they should be reported. I don't want to launch down that path right now and try and identify principles, because that's part of the afternoon's work, is to identify these principles, not just around stratification, but also about reference population, et cetera.
Okay. So is it fair then to say that we are sort of doing both things, which is coming up with these overarching principles?
Yes, overarching cross-cutting recommendations.
As well as specific criteria
for
around both measure identification, measure development.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm being very simplistic, but I want to get back to the 700, and I'm trying to understand, of the 700, 135 in the last round, the ambulatory disparity, 30, no, I'm sorry, there were 135 or 100 and something ambulatory measures total at the time. Of those, 35 came forward and were endorsed by NQF, right?
Came forward and were designated
disparity sensitive. Okay. So what we have of the kind of, if we subtract that number, we still have quite a few measures that are not ambulatory. So they're either inpatient, long-term care, et cetera, or they're ambulatory.
Or additional ambulatory.
So we still have. So what I was trying to do was see if we could get to a point where we know that we've already vetted a number of measures, but it doesn't look like that happened, because there's an additional list.
All measures are now going through measure maintenance at this point, so that's why this is an opportune time for us to think through what would we want to see as those measures are re-vetted, in addition to what would we want de novo measures to bring to the table, whether they're the disparities sentinel, if that's the direction we go, or more cross-cutting ones, what would you want to see them bring to the table?
So I was trying to make sense of kind of what we were working with when we, in terms of answering this question for you all about whether the staff should be reviewing the existing 700 plus measures to identify those that are disparity sensitive, which does not identify the sentinel disparities measures, only the disparity sensitive.
Right. Okay.
That's correct. And thank you, Ramona, for leading us into our next discussion point. So what we wanted to do was quickly over the break, we just came up with a few basic questions to kind of figure out where the committee is in terms of consensus around some basic ideas that we need to iron out before we move any further. So the first was just mentioned. It's up on the screen. Should N2F staff review the existing portfolio, that's the 700 plus measures, to identify a disparity sensitive subset?
Show of hands.
Show of hands.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's a yes. And if the committee agrees with that, the next question is, what criteria should be used? Recommended within the commission paper are the criteria of prevalence and quality gap. If you agree with that, we will use that. And in addition, is there anything else besides the prevalence and quality gap that should be considered?
Can I ask a clarifying question? By prevalence, do you mean overall prevalence, prevalence in whites, prevalence in blacks, differential prevalence, and the same for quality gap?
What the paper specifies. I think the paper was prevalence of within, so something that was more prevalent in a minority population would rise to the top.
Delta prevalence and same for quality, delta quality?
Assuming, yeah.
For great, so greatest of whatever tract populations there are.
Right. Another clarifying question, Adam.
So, anything else? I think there are a couple of things that should be considered. One of them is that is the measurement easy to obtain, or not easy to obtain, but not burdensome to obtain for practicing physicians or for systems to record. And the other thing is prevalence is an interesting concept, but maybe you should look at potentially financial impact in terms of the ability to change cost of care with respect to the intervention that's made.
Okay, with respect to the former, I think that was actually part of some of the original criteria. So I think applying that filter is not an issue if the committee agrees. With respect to the latter, I don't think we have data that we're going to be able to, I don't disagree that that would be a good filter. It's just that I don't think we have the data to be able to apply that filter.
Just as an additional criteria, I wonder if the idea of public impact should be brought in, that there are some conditions that have more impact on the public, that capture people's imagination more than other conditions. So if you compare disparities in mortality rates for breast cancer, I think it has more of a public impact than does differences in mortality or hospitalization rates, say, for heart failure. And, you know, I think one of the things that's been missing from this discussion is a sense of what the community feels is important. That, you know, it's one thing to come up with a list of stuff with a bunch of people in suits and a expensive hotel in Washington. It's another thing to think about what people in minority communities think is important. And I just really like to see that issue and that voice brought into this.
It's a question of measures and context. You know, what are the contexts that are relevant to the way this information coming from N2F would be received? You know, so community context, political context, social context, other contexts that are key to interest, understanding, application.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that, you know, if this whole field is going to move together, then there has to be some, you know, groundswell of support for it. There has to be some sort of underlying support for it. This can't be a set of esoteric measures that are interesting to quality wonks. I mean, I think this has to be something that captures the imagination of people who are going to sort of push their physicians and their hospitals and all that other sort of stuff to make some fundamental changes.
Okay, so impact was one of the original criteria. So it sounds like...
I'm advocating for making that be one of the fundamental...
So does anyone... Can we have a show of hands? Does the committee agree that impact should be a criterion that's considered when the ANCUA staff applies its filter?
The impact, usability, feasibility, all those sorts of things, they already exist. That's how measures get into NQF. The principles, and I don't know how different principles are from criteria, but so be it, that were from the 2008 report, each one of them, there's some overlap, but they referred to impact on the minority population, right? Feasibility and ability to affect quality processes on the minority population. So... and we think that's important too, but just to make sure that the discussion goes in an efficient way, I think people ought to realize that there's overall impact, which gets a measure already selected, which we assume all these have already gone through that filter, and then there's this additional one about, you know, impact on the minority population, ability to improve quality of care in the minority population, and so on. That's what these principles are focused on. And we just were emphasizing prevalence and gap, but the other ones... make sense. It's not that they don't make sense.
Sorry.
Thanks. No, that's important for all. Appreciate it.
Ellen and then Marcel.
Just to be able to learn from past experience, what were the criteria that was used for the ambulatory care screening, and how did that work out?
The four were quality gap, prevalence, the impact of the condition, impact of the quality process and actionable, ease and feasibility of improving the quality process. How did it work out? It depends on where you sat. Some people thought there were two measures. Some people thought there weren't enough. So I can't provide you any more guidance other than it really depended. Some people thought 35 was just way too many, and others were unhappy that it wasn't a broader set.
Marcel, then Mary, then Mark.
I think my first comment is really linked to that, because I was going to ask if there's any utility in thinking about a target number for us as a group as to what we thought was a good size for our starter set, or whether we wanted to revisit that later. But there probably is some range that is reasonable, and I certainly was thinking around that 30 to 40 that the ambulatory team came up with. And then my other thought was, I mean, I agree that we should probably be starting where there's the delta, but just for the record, to say that the point was made several times this morning that often where there is no delta existing currently doesn't mean that's not an important place for us to look in future for disparities, or that we might just not have good enough data in that area yet. So to have some caveat where for us to consider that there might not currently be a delta, but there is either overwhelming impact or something else that makes us think that's an important criteria or standard.
So I guess I would ask, as I hear, what's the impact? How do we overlay a lens of what's the state of the science that could impact what could be a very emotionally charged issue? As an example, in disparities, one might think about prostate cancer incidence and the issue of whether or not you should screen, and there's lots of debate. So what is the state of the science for, and we have to be, I would think, socially responsible in terms of thinking about cost-benefit analysis, do we advocate for what we think the public wants to hear is we should do something versus has the needle moved and we now should be thinking of what does the science say we should do? And I guess as we think about these things, I want us to consider what's the best in terms of what we know scientifically in discussing what could be a very emotionally charged issue.
So the question really had to do with like what is practical from the staff's perspective. That I think like all the items that Joel and Joe had on the slide are great elements. Some of them start getting harder to operationalize. For example, prevalence and quality, very straightforward, I think, for the staff to go through. Something like impact is tougher, and I agree with Mary that it should be not politically based, at least the data we get, but based upon science. Or something like actionability, that's another one where it's not as obvious as prevalence or quality gap. So what is feasible for the staff? And so it may turn out, for example, that if you still get to a reasonable number just using the simple ones, like prevalence and quality, and then, if a reasonable number are then sent back to this group, then the group can probably, fumble around with the ones that are harder to operationalize, like actionability and impact and all. But if it's still a large number, then maybe you guys need to then include those in the filter.
That would certainly be the approach that I think we would want to take, even if you hadn't recommended it.
Okay. I mean, another issue, too, is like, and everyone remember this, when the IOM made recommendations recently to ARC in terms of the quality and disparities reports, one of the major concerns with the current reports is that they didn't have prioritization, so that you basically have 200 measures, and so no one knows where to start. And so that's still potentially the danger here, unless, particularly the impact part is brought in. That prevalence and quality are one thing, but for example, if there's a big quality gap in measuring A1C for diabetic patients, that's probably a less important measure, even if it's a big gap, than something that has a more of a direct public health effect, like an actual outcome, as an example.
Francis and then Mara.
Just a very simple question. I may have missed it, obviously, but the five criteria that were used in the ambulatory report that Rose mentioned earlier, I'm just wondering, could those be the five criteria that we use here as well? I guess I'm missing something there.
Well, and that's the recommendation from MGH was that on balance, we should focus on prevalence and incidence as we screen now across this portfolio, recognizing that when NQF endorses measures, it considers a lot of these other things writ large. So it's an emphasis.
Right, especially as the endorsement criteria have been getting harder and harder over the last several years. A lot of these other things are part and parcel. Impact is one of the must-pass criteria for all measures, so it doesn't need to be in this data set. I think the criteria is what the MGH folks would
do. Yeah, I think the impact on viewing it from the disadvantaged population is slightly different. So, but let me see if I can. Oh well, you have two other people, and then let me see if I could frame the question.
Well, and it might be a similar question. So, when the ambulatory measures were evaluated, and you got down to 35. Was it because the other 100 really weren't at all relevant to disparities, or it was sort of a prioritization, or that's what I'm sort of struggling with, is how to understand, like, why 35 made it and why 100 didn't versus, that.
Yeah, it was more or less a prioritization. I mean, folks didn't feel that, however, all 20 or 12, however many diabetes measures were in the set at that time, all had to be considered disparity sensitive. In fact, I don't even know if any of the diabetes ones are in there. I'm just making this up, relatively speaking. So once they created the set, they winnowed down and said, if you're going to measure one aspect of X care, these one or two measures of a set, that's 12 or 15 or 20, are the most important issues.
what are they? So let's just use 20 diabetes as an example. And regardless, whatever it is, 20 of X. So if there's 20 of X, do they always have to report on 20 of X, or do they get to pick and say, I'm doing 2 of X and reporting?
Who chooses what to implement is a separate issue.
Okay. Because I guess I'm also trying to figure out if you have 20 and you, you know, the question is it become a huge, you know, obstacle for folks versus we're sort of moving forward with electronic health records and everything. So if you're collecting race and ethnicity and language once, it should be available for however many measures you have. But again, I think that might be sort of my simplistic understanding of it. But I'm trying to sort of grapple with this, you know, not putting a burden on it, not creating a negative impression of addressing disparities, but also are we really almost stratifying ourselves more than we have to by saying we're only going to pick and choose certain measures?
We're not going to pick and choose what people should implement. Folks who are implementing would pick and choose amongst this, but we are winnowing down the 700 to say, you know, for the time being right now, because we don't have, you know, all of our systems in place to make this seamless as part of, you know, an analysis for any entity to just push button, because, you know, they collect race and ethnicity, they collect all the data elements for these measures, so, you know, doing one is and pushing the button is no different than pushing the button and, you know, getting a readout for 50.
So it's part
we're not at that place yet, so what we're doing is identifying the measures that you may wish to look at when you're looking at disparities within your system.
So it's part of the evaluation then, if someone else is requiring it for implementation currently, that it should rise higher for us in terms of prioritizing because it's being used, then therefore we should have this data collected. Like if CMS, if there's 20 disparities measures and CMS is requiring 2, should we be thinking about saying, well, those 2 should have race, ethnicity, language because they're already being required elsewhere and the other 18 aren't? Like is that a way to slice this or not?
Well, yes and no, because we don't select the measures at the end of the day. CMS does. We make recommendations through this new process called the MAP, but at the end of the day, the end users, the health plan, CMS, and others select their measures. I think the key is to also think about we do have a usability criterion, which is explicitly about is the measure in use, is it having an impact in terms of QI or accountability function. So that's why in some ways I keep coming back to the idea of saying it's really when these measures come back up that I find it more intriguing and interesting than as they're up for review and you're looking at the overall measure, the impact, the importance, the scientific acceptability, et cetera, that you then include this lens rather than just simply retrospectively without the benefit of another committee looking at the measure. But
thanks. And the usability is really good segue in that I think beyond that, I would like to propose that we also consider how many stakeholders in the continuum healthcare systems are impacted, you know. So not to say that the ambulatory or inpatient by themselves in a silo isn't important, but to extend that to the extent that you have a measure that impacts several key stakeholders who can all report on, I think would make it more powerful. So I would like us, you know, to consider that possibility. And then the other thing is had a brain leakage moment. Oh, in terms of ROI and how you were saying that we might not have the data, I would also like to propose thinking about the measure in terms of not so much actionability, but in terms of turnaround time. So, for example, if we were to look at a measure like immunization inpatient readmission, you know, post procedure, those tend to be a little bit more episodic, and if you change the system or have intervention, you should be able to see improvement more quickly than, say, trying to impact hemoglobin A1C score, which is a chronic disease and requires a lot of constant vigilance on the part of the doctor, the patient, and so on. So you might not see that needle move as easily. And in my, again, practical insight to situation, a lot of times the senior leadership, in order to commit to interventions, dollars, whatever, they want to see a quick result. I mean, it doesn't have to be return on money, but they want to see improvement in quality. So if we pick all these long-term measurements that are going to be very hard to move, you might lose kind of the power. So I'd like at least to have consider a mix of some short-term versus long-term. That's all. Thank you.
So the white paper we reviewed actually makes a point of this particular aspect of it, and this gets to deals with the feasibility and actionability, I guess, and that, and I'm probably certain that this wasn't done on the first screening, that the impact of patient or practitioners and systems that take care of predominantly minority population are not adversely affected by the measures that we choose. And I don't want to put a disproportionate burden on people who just happen to have very large minority practices because it may not be as actionable for them as it may be for other people. Maybe that criteria should be taken into account in your selection of 700.
This is just a practical consideration, which is that you might also want to look separately across outcome measures and look separately across different settings, because you typically see bigger disparities gaps, for instance, in outcomes and processes, and you'd bias towards outcomes than if you just took a straight line kind of approach. And similarly, you tend to see bigger disparities in outpatient settings and inpatient settings. So again, that would be a bias if you just took a straight line approach.
Yeah, and I agree. So I think the staff probably has enough guidance on the extra criteria, the types of things that the steering committee would like to have considered as they screen the 700 plus. Primarily, you know, it's like we're just going to do a first cut at prevalence and quality, and then we're going to look to the extent to which we can assess the other criteria that were discussed here. And, you know, we'll, obviously the work product comes back to the committee, you know, for deliberation and discussion. Okay, why was this one in, this one not, this one had data, this one didn't, you know. I don't know, went with my gut, you know. I mean, there are going to be those kinds of discussions, but I think the committee has the sense that, I mean, the staff has a sense of where to proceed with that. So then the next question, and I think that everyone's in agreement, but that we need a show of hands on, is MGH proposed a categorization scheme that focused on, you know, looking at whether I'm going to Ernie's point, and that was a great segue, structure, process, and outcome measures. They divided up under patient experience or so. Then they had provider level, system level, et cetera. So was that categorization scheme that they proposed, the committee comfortable with that? Because what we would then do is array the disparity-sensitive set, in quotes, in that categorization scheme. It would allow you to see how many structure, how many process, how many outcomes you had, where there might be gaps.
It would be useful if you could point out on what page that's listed so we can look
sure.
at it again. Please.
I was just looking at it. So that's actually section 3D in the paper, and that's page 24 in the comprehensive report.
Sean, did you have a comment?
I didn't mean to hamper the progress because it was going back. I just want to throw out one other, which is looking at the sample size and precision issues when you're doing the screening. It's not all captured in the prevalence proportions that are very close to zero in water. It's not amenable to further stratification. That will be a practical issue.
Well, and I think that's a practical issue that we'll get when we identify the principles, because that is one issue, sample size.
I'm just, if you guys could provide a little bit more clarity, and maybe this isn't part of what you guys are doing as an analysis, if it's not, let me know, but the root of the potential disparity and when something is sort of the patient's at the root of it, I guess that was a little confusing to me. And if you guys aren't going to do with it, then forget it, but if it's possibly part of this evaluation that you guys are going to do, I'd like to know more.
And I think, you know, we tried to say, so the easiest example is asthma assessment. What's an asthma assessment done? That is clearly something that the provider initiates. If there was an issue of communication, right, so some measures are more kind of patient-based, and those are more related to communication and or self-management issues. And then there were system-based measures, which are more, you know, our systems in place, interpreter services and the like. So it's kind of a rough way to think about these things. Some are more clear-cut than others, but it was our way to kind of think about, okay, really, particularly for Foundation for Interventions, kind of what are these measures telling us about where we might intervene in the future?
I had a question that may, I think it's in here, but I just wanted to hear from you folks, maybe clarify it a little bit. But when I read this section, to me, one of the dominant issues, challenges, is around care coordination, kind of connecting the pieces. Why? I know it seems to be implied in here. I was wondering where you might see that fitting in your framework context.
It could, there probably are a bunch of care coordination measures, and they could fit in any one of these categories. For example, patient experience is very important. Assessment of care coordination. It could be other things in terms of what practitioners do. There could be measures within the hospital. We said that there'd probably be a lot of overlap. I think the idea is, and by the way, I know that some people say, these are not additional criteria. This is just a way of, you got 700, you know, if you come up with a small set, whether you want to call it a starter set or something, you might just go back to this categorization and say, boy, do we have some in each of these categories? And if not, maybe you ought to rethink it. That's really, I think, you know, the utility of this categorization. I don't think you ought to read too much into it.
Can I just go back? The reason I asked the question, and I don't know how to be delicate about this, so I just won't, is to me sort of having the root of potential disparity meaning the patient is, it's worrisome to me. And I understand that there could be circumstances, I guess, but in general it feels to me like it's almost, you know, the blame the patient kind of a thing. So, and I'm not sure that should be part of this discussion. I mean, to the extent that we're measuring what the provider did to do the intervention, to get the test done, to do whatever, that's what we're evaluating. And I guess it is somewhat process versus outcome. If some of the outcome is related to the patient has not complied, maybe, but it's just a little bit worrisome to me to, I guess, to see it so sort of starkly in black and white. And Ellen's agreeing with me because we just had this conversation across the table and decided who was going to raise it. So she can be indelicate with me, too.
Can I just say, though, I think it's less, it's not about blame. This is about potential for intervention, right? So if you're going to do a quality improvement intervention on, you see you have low numbers of asthma assessment by docs, and you know that you need to do some, you know, report carding, auditing, feedback, and the like to get the rates of asthma assessment up. If you see that it's something that's more subject to communication, then what the patient-based piece tells you is that a coach or a navigator might be able to help the patient deal with some of the barriers to kind of achieve that quality. So it's less a blame and more of a kind of, if you were to improve here, where would you improve? So,
well, then maybe it's just a coding and it could be called communication or something else, but I think it's just by calling it patient, to me, it's sort of like, some of it's on the provider doing, some of it's on the patient doing, and so that just to me is, you know, from the advocate perspective, I just don't like it when we sort of go down that path. So I think it could purely be semantics.
In looking at this, I think the title is poor. It's not the root. It's the, you could call it the implementation lever or the lever for change, right? I mean, it's with the physician, with the patient. You know.
But again, if it's a communication issue, it's having the right systems in place. It's not the responsibility of the patient to bring the interpreter. The communication services should be in place at the provider level. So I think it is just a framing issue, but at least from, I think, the advocate's perspective or the you know, patient, whatever role I'm supposed to be representing, I think it's just the naming and the coding more than anything.
Maybe we can call it intervention audience or intervention target audience. That might sound better. No.
Well, no, because I think if it is about communication, then it's a communication systems issue. Yes. And so it is. Do you have an interpreter? Do you have a navigator? Do you have a whatever? It's not really about where the intervention. I don't know. I'll let you guys figure it out and wordsmith it. Those are just the concerns that I'll raise.
If I may add one thing. So overall, I like the categories very much. The only other thing that, once again, I must ask us to maybe consider is adding another category for more of the system type of metrics. For the healthcare system, you know, as a whole, infrastructure stuff.
Other down.
We got the feedback. Mass General MGH can, you know, consider what was done here, perhaps think of some labeling. But overall, directionally, I think that we're good to go on this one.
Okay. I'm sure we move on to the 12:45 slot. What would you like to go next? Oh, okay. We have another set of questions related to these issues.
So again, we're asking for a show of hands. First question is, should NQF adopt the disparity fentanyl measures approach?
Anyone who agrees, yes, if you could raise your hand.
Yes.
And everyone is clear on, okay.
Okay.
So, yes, if that's the case, should this be applied retrospectively to the entire portfolio of measures, so to the 700-plus measures?
Right, this would be an additional lens as we go through. Anyone, committee members who think that yes, this should be an additional lens?
So the this...
is both disparity sensitive and should be considered a sentinel measure.
So the idea is to review the set of 700 measures and pull out those that you would consider sentinel.
So let's imagine we've got all 700 measures and we've checked off, you know, all these that are sensitive. There will probably be a subset, or there could be a subset if we look through the lens of ones that are also sentinel. And the question is, do we want to retrospectively look at the portfolio, or is this a notion that we should just consider going forward?
I wanted to make a point of clarification. I think this should be disparity sensitive, because the review of the 700 is disparity sensitive.
Sensitive, right. That's what, yeah. It seems like the language should be disparity sensitive measures.
The top one should be
sensitive.
The bottom
one should be sentinel.
New measure development, which should be sentinel measures.
Right. The bullet should read disparity sensitive measures and then pull out sentinel measures from it.
So, sentinel measures are the new measures. So, when we're reviewing, when the NQF is reviewing the 700 plus measures, you're pulling out disparity-sensitive measures, and we're looking at the sentinel measures through a completely, through a different lens.
Well, no, but some of the sensitive measures could also be sentinel, considered sentinel.
So sentinel doesn't, can I get clarification from how you're defining them, please?
Yeah, I think we were thinking of sentinel as kind of new measure development. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is a semantics word. This is semantics again. You know, sentinel means something that becomes a watch post for you, right? But the thinking about the first part, in our framework, sensitivity is a review of the 700. And then sentinel as well. You know, we have disparities in pain management in the ED, and there's nothing like that at all in the 700. That should be a disparity sentinel measure that is something new that's developed.
Right. And what the point I am making is there may well be measures that you consider to be sentinel. That, and there won't be very many, but there may well be them within the disparity-sensitive set.
And
just because it's new doesn't mean it's sentinel and vice versa.
Yeah, just to sort of beat the semantic issue into the ground, sentinel has really two very distinct definitions. One is, you know, when we think of sentinel events, those are those sort of standout events. That's not how we were using it here. We were using sentinel in terms of like the Army sentinel, you know, watching over things, but as being sort of thinking about the future and really if thinking about them as developmental in the future. These are areas where, you know, the literature suggests something's going on. There are no measures out there, no good measures out there. And so we got to think about perhaps developing or asking measure developers to look at those areas. You could use them either way you want, but I'm just saying that the way that's in this report, and I apologize if it's not clear, it's that sort of developmental issue, not sort of the standout sentinel event type of issue. That may
okay.
Want to have different terminology.
That actually is an important distinction because that's not a distinction that I think we interpreted the report to mean. So.
Elizabeth and
but
then Marcella.
I have a question about that because as we talked about and you say in your report, and looking at the disparities measures, you said one way to do it is to look at data we already know. We already know there are disparities in certain things, and so should we look at measures that we already know there are disparities in? But some of those measures, and if you use that criterion, impact and prevalence, some of the 700 may not fall out, even though they could be these measures we should develop and these sentinel measures. Do you see what I'm saying? So I think I have the same confusion you do, Robin, which is that I think there is a way to look at those 700 as maybe not being things that already exist that we know, but could potentially be measures. So I just, that's where I think we could develop new things and look at, to take that lens to look at the existing 700 too.
So the framework that I was thinking in that was slightly different. So I thought that we were looking through the 700 for disparity sensitive measures that we would then prioritize, so a little bit different, and that any de novo measurement creation would be sentinel. But then following up on Liz's point, which was one of the thoughts I had earlier, which was in the first pass there may be measures that don't meet our criteria for, you know, delta prevalence, delta quality, but we suspect might be important in the future. So how do we build in a way to revisit those, whatever we call them, be it disparity sensitive or
the almost
sentinel, the quasi sentinel, the emerging sentinel.
Maybe it's this way. So the first pass of the 700 is disparity sensitive, and then you go back to anyone that didn't make that cut, and you check if they should be adapted as a sentinel one or a new one becomes a sentinel one. Right? You can't be both disparity sensitive and disparity sentinel. It's an either or.
Well, that's the question.
Right, but there might be some, I guess I'm going with the either or, but I think that there might be existing NQF standards that are not disparity sensitive that could become a sentinel.
Mr. Committee, Mary, you had your...
And I guess what I would encourage us to do, in addition to looking at a glossary and definition of terms down the road, is to be clear that we are not referring to the sentinel as we're all familiar with the Joint Commission, because that raises a different bar. And everyone would say, of course, let's look at those. So we need to either choose different language or be so exquisitely clear that we're not having this problem.
I think we're just arguing semantics. If you look back at the prior slide, what we voted on were additional criteria needed, and it sounds like what people are saying, and I totally agree with that, is that these additional criteria are needed. We just should not call them sentinel. But I would argue apply this in addition to the other two, and particularly for the reason that Liz said that there may be areas in which disparities have not been assessed. So overall quality measures where disparities haven't been assessed, but if you looked, they would be there because they fit into one of these categories.
Okay, so just to clarify then, so we've got the 700 plus measures. The staff screens them with the original lens, identifies a disparity sensitive subset. The staff then screens those that haven't been placed into that bin with the four criteria that are here that are listed up, to see if, in fact, there are sentinel measures. Is that what the committee is agreeing to? Does anyone object to the approach that I just laid out?
Why not just screen them all with all of the criteria at the same time?
Well, how we operationalize the recommendation, I think we...
Something that was in the report, something that I thought was in the report, was moving forward, you're looking for new measures. If you apply kind of the usual framework that's out there, whether we might come up with or they may have come up with, you may have missed the boat. There may be areas that are not being addressed when you apply the criteria that are out there, because they're in smaller populations or areas that haven't been previously the focus of performance of quality measurement, but that you need to be a separate effort to take what's in the literature to identify those other leftover things that are being missed, and that would be a separate effort looking at sentinel measures, so that it could be moving forward, sentinel measures and something else.
So we've agreed to screening 700 measures to identify the disparity sensitive set. So the question is whether we should take those that aren't identified as disparities sensitive,
but in fact may be indicative of the characteristics here for sentinel measures and take a pass at looking at those, recognizing that we're going to get to the question of guidance that we give to future measures. That's another question. Right now, it's just what we do in terms of sentinel measures and the existing set.
Ernie's in William, and Ellen's leaning into her,
This isn't about the process. This is just about the criteria. Another approach that people have chosen, they're trying to perhaps ensure that there are measures that are specific to specific populations. So maybe trying to make sure that in this, quote, sentinel set, there are measures that are relevant to the American Indian population specifically, like alcohol or domestic violence. That's just another criteria that could be applied in addition to these four.
So my thinking about the sentinel sensitive sort of question, like I said, it was confusing me before, and now it's a little clearer, at least it was until we had this discussion, is the fact that in order to do the review to determine a sentinel event, one would have to do literature searches to find out what measures or what disparities exist, and then identify them as not being in the 700 that exist right now. And then having either an RFA or whatever request for additional measures that you submit outward to identify what measures should be used. Now that's how I thought that you intended the sentinel event to be done. And that's not a re-review of the 700 that you excluded.
Right.
Once you excluded them, they're excluded. And maybe if they become important later on, then they may fit the criteria that the data that is now available could suggest you could use an existing measurement. That would require a re-review of the whole 700 set or how many other there will be in the future. But the idea of sentinel, I think, is an entirely new sort of description of a measure that exists because there is non-existent measure and that there is data suggesting that there potentially should be a measure.
Joe, do you... Joel want to say anything about
it? That's a very articulate way of describing what we were looking at, with the exception of using the term sensible.
Yeah, Robin, quick question. Do you have any sense of what these numbers are likely to look like? I mean, being familiar with the 700,
yep,
in terms of disparity sensitive and sentinel,
Yeah.
So it could be all or...
Well, I shoot from the hip if I could, but I can't even get there. So.
Okay.
So the question.
So it sounds like we won't apply the issue of sample measures to the performance.
Okay. So just to reiterate, recap, we won't apply the sentinel measures to the portfolio. Is that right?
Yeah.
We will.
So,
okay, so just, so let's, okay, let me just take a step back for a second. So the paper recommends, again, certain categories of evidence to determine disparity sensitivity. And within those categories, that's where they make a recommendation around disparity sentinel, and they also list out those four sub-bullet criteria that are shown on the screen.
For sensitive.
Okay. So, according to the paper, where no data exists on disparities for a particular measure, or where data exists but shows no disparities, their suggestion is to then apply those four sub-bullets that are shown on the screen to identify those measures as disparities sensitive.
Sensitive.
Then, if there is a known disparity exists, but no quality measure exists, that's when we term those measures as sentinel. Does that make sense? I'm sorry, can you say that again?
I think we're moving away from the word sentinel because it has other meanings for providers and institutions than it's being used here.
But so let's say that you come to 35. For everything else, the other 700, you are going to apply those four sub-bullets. Is that what you're saying? Am I understanding that correctly? Was that the plan?
That's what we were asking the committee.
Okay, that's what I understood, and I vote for yes for that process.
Because my understanding was that for the 700, to have the staff go through, disparity sensitive is the only lens through which they would be evaluating those 700. And then a whole other conversation begins separate about novel measures, right? For where there is, for the last situation where there are data suggesting a disparity, but there is currently no measure. So I'm just saying my understanding was the staff goes through once 700 for disparity sensitive, not applying the previously known as sentinel criteria.
But weren't you asking the question of did we want you to go through for the remaining, go through those four sub-bullets? That's the question on the table. Okay. And I'm voting yes for that.
But then in addition, it's possible to also still do the review of brand new conditions, or emergent conditions. I think so for disparity exists, but no measure.
Yeah, we're not talking about going forward right now.
Okay, so I've gone through my 700, and I've identified 350 that are disparity sensitive. All right, whatever, 40. Pick your number. We know there's 35 in ambulatory care. Okay, so get to 40. Of the remaining, can something be sentinel if not sensitive? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Do you have to do a second lens? And it's not currently care with a high degree of discretion, communication sensitive, lifestyle changes, outcomes rather than process, but it's still a measure that if it was developed slightly differently when it comes up for reevaluation as opposed to from scratch, it would become sensitive.
Can I, Joel also says there's another step, but there's, I like the linear thinking and trying to put things into buckets, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And here's one way to think about it, that you apply this, the prevalence and quality gap, and you've identified some disparity-sensitive measures. And then you've got a bunch of others that maybe don't fit those filters. But, for example, it may be a communication intensive measure, and you might consider that as a potentially a disparity-sensitive measure in addition. But then you have, I think you're also conflating the two tasks that NQF is trying to do. One is to come up with a list of disparity-sensitive measures among the measures that they already have. And then, you know, there's new measure development. And where do those new disparity-sensitive measures come from? They come from this idea that there are things in the literature for which no measures currently exist. So I think, and those are what we're calling sentinel, bad word, exploratory, developmental, you know, I think you ought to maybe settle on a different word right now. And that's a different task entirely, I think, because when NQF recommends their starter set or whatever they want to do about disparity sensitive measures, there are not going to be any sentinel measures in there because sentinel measures don't exist. It's the RFA process that William mentioned. Does that help a little bit, maybe? And Joe, you want to?
I think that the slide that we had that was the algorithm, I think it does a good job of this because it's step one. You know, let's dial back 10 years. There's a measure on inhaled corticosteroids for pediatric asthmatics. We know there's a disparity there. That gets pulled out right there. We know that's like disparity measure. That's one. Then the second is, well, there's something that there's no disparities, but if we look at that filter there, those 4 points, yeah, this could be something that, you know, if looked at, could be sensitive as well, pull that out as well. And then the separate task, which Joel is mentioning, is, you know, after you've done that with the 700, then there's an RFA process of saying, well, you know, the NQF concludes that there are these disparities, there's no measures at all, and we need to go through the sausage kind of making of developing those new measures that have a more disparities focus to them. That's what we're trying to convey.
Colette, is your...
I was actually going to let this go, but then I went back. So I'm actually quite confused now because I'm looking at page 22. So help me clarify, please. Page 22, prior to the section 3.C, the last paragraph, and how disparities sentinel measures are distinguished from disparities sensitive measures. And as I read this, I am thinking that what you just proposed is a different definition.
Well, all I could—I mean, if you look at what we've done at Mass General, we didn't have—we know that disparities. We call our disparity sentinel measures right now pain management in the emergency room because by race ethnicity, which we did not have any measure that we were reporting to anybody or to anything. And so we created. We began with the chart review. Mm-hmm. We began to create our own internal measure for that. That's what we called. So we stratify our core measures, HEDIS, CAPS, you know, all that stuff, because number one, that's, we think that's important. We think that their evidence shows us that many of those are disparity sensitive, and so the sentinel piece is something that's, it's a completely new measure development. That's what we were trying, and if we didn't communicate it clearly, I'm trying to communicate it clearly now.
Okay.
That's exactly what we're trying to do.
I would listen to Joe now and that was...
Pardon me?
I would listen to what Joe is trying to explain and add.
Yeah, but then if it got jammed up, then that would... Does that make sense? Or?
Yeah, so can I just... should this last paragraph then be edited and rewritten to clarify?
Sure.
Okay, all right. Because that ended up being quite confusing to me because I thought that these were not necessarily new measures, but were measures that were specific to measuring disparities, not just... disparity sensitive, which are general quality measures that we can look at through a disparities lens, but these were, that sentinel as defined here, were very disparity sensitive and are disparity specific for helping organizations recognize potential disparities. But it's a different...
We apologize.
Okay. All right.
So can I just build on that and clarify, because I think I've now got it too. At least I hope I do. So an NQF standard already is collect race, ethnicity, language data. And you may have another standard, a hemoglobin A1, B, C, whatever the heck that is, H1, whatever. So both of these could be disparity sensitive under this framework, even though one is very explicit to disparities, which was collected data, and one is a more generic, get your A1B. Stop laughing at me. Thank you. Get your A1C, but since we can stratify it by race and ethnicity, it's also disparity sensitive. So we may have different levels of disparity sensitive, and some that are really explicit and have been that way, and some that we think are just sort of getting there. Is that, do I have it? So we're not like hierarchy, we don't have a hierarchy within NQF standards, or some are really great and some are not. They can all be disparity sensitive. Okay.
Okay. So now that we have an understanding of the algorithm, let's just recap. Everyone agrees we should review the entire portfolio to identify them as disparity sensitive. Correct? Okay. And everyone agrees with the current definition of disparity sentinel. That's a completely new measure.
I'll say something that I feel voting on this is once you take a vote on it and then the NQF staff feel compelled to move forward and carry it out, trickles down. If there's any, I feel like there's a lot of confusion there. And like I feel like I heard ideas that I thought sounded great, but also the overwhelming sense is that there's confusion. And now we're going to vote on something potentially while there's still confusion, and maybe everyone has a different idea in their mind about what sentinel means and what we're distinguishing here and distinguishing there. Vote on it now. Now you're stuck with it, and it's going to affect the way all the measures get developed moving forward. And it seems to me, I'm not trying to like stop any progress, but it seems like you'd want to have this watertight before you before you make a vote.
Well, I think there's some. I think there's some clarity around. I think there's some clarity around the idea of examining the 700 measures in terms of sensitivity. I think the term sentinel should just should be removed, and you refer to novel, emerging other, but just get rid of the word sentinel as it's really confusing if we're kind of kicking back on it. So it's novel, emerging, or heretofore not identified, or whatever, you know, that.
So what we're voting on now is that the 700 would be reviewed though with an eye of what we know are existing quality measures for disparities and those that would meet the other four criterion. Okay. And then, in addition to those, we're going to think about new measures. We'll just call them new measures.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Are those up, or are you questions? No? Thank you.
I was just going to offer a similar clarification that, in essence, what you're saying is that the definition for disparity sensitive are the first two major bullets up there, one of which includes the known disparities, and the other which includes these four criteria.
Yes.
And as part of this, of the staff's work, in terms of helping us to figure out what sentinel measures we should take, or whatever we're going to call it, novel measures we should take, are they going to provide us with literature of one type, or are we going to use our own expertise to help to develop literature? I'm not sure which is the case.
You're going to use
develop
your own
the literature.
Yeah, you're going to use your own expertise to make recommendations to staff on what areas you think would be appropriate.
Absolutely.
So with your intention, disparity-sensitive, classifying measures of disparity-sensitive has been done in the past, was done 5 years ago, apparently. And I thought that this group was doing something different, which is not just looking at existing measures through the lens of disparities, but actually saying, how do we address measurement of disparities in healthcare? And that I thought it wasn't just that the new measures would all fall into this bucket of what you were calling sentinel, but rather that moving forward there would be a call for measures, and that what does it mean that everything that would be in that call for measures would be the sentinel measures. The sentinel measures was a second bucket of new measures. Is it just one bucket of new measures or two in what you're proposing?
Gore, actually, 2008 was the report was only about ambulatory care measures, and they came up with a set of principles that are very similar to criteria, although the principles applied, even the impact kinds of things applied, they said, you know, impact on minority populations, so there is some overlap, but they came up with the principles, but they came up with 35 disparity-sensitive ambulatory care measures. Now there not only are a ton more ambulatory care measures, but there are other institutions involved, hospitals, nursing homes, and so on. So now you've got these 723 measures. So I think what we were asked to do was to kind of, you know, repeat this process. Were those principles, are they good candidates for criteria? And should there be new criteria considered, and so on? And so what we've done, and we said, well, you know, those are pretty good criteria, and especially prevalence and quality gap are the ones you really want to focus on. So as Robin was saying, you go through all those, and the first cut for disparity sensitive is prevalence and quality gap for disparity sensitive. The next cut is the ones that don't make those cut. You go and you apply these other four criteria to see if any stand out. I like to think of the communication ones. There may be ones that there's not an obvious disparity gap right now, but you know, you ought to think about those as being disparity sensitive. And then, relying on the expertise of this group, you may want to put out some RFAs saying, you know what, this is an important area in disparities, but we have no quality measure among those 723. 723 is not enough. So we need some more. Let's develop those. And then, so I don't know if that answers that question so far. And then a separate question would be what gets done with these measures that you all identify. And I think that's where the role of NQF versus NCQA, you know, and who does what with what is maybe getting a little conflated. You may just want to suggest a set of, you know, like a starter set that somebody could use to characterize or profile an organization as having equitable care. Maybe you want to add some modules to be sensitive to some of the geographic differences in the country, right? You might want to do that. You might want to make all those kinds of recommendations, but you're really getting into another territory there about how they're actually going to be used. And that's why I think Robin kept saying, we're going to list a bunch of measures. It's up to other people, to other organizations, to select which ones they want. But we're going to say, if you want to profile your organization in terms of its equitable care, these are some disparity-sensitive measures that you might look at. Sorry to go on for so long, but I don't know. Does that help?
Well, but to go to your point, Sean, you know, we will move into the kind of guidance that we can give organizations on the criteria or the principles or the recommendations on what they should use as they identify which of those measures are better or worse for them to implement. We haven't gotten to that part of our...
It might be good to do a clinical example. I'm just kind of trying to think through my head of a clinical example. Helen mentioned the end-stage renal disease bucket, right? So let's just say there's 20 measures of end-stage renal disease. And you look at them and you say, well, you know, we know there are disparities in end-stage renal disease. So there's three of them that are about, you know, some aspects of referral to being listed for renal transplantation. We know there are disparities there. Those three get pulled out. But then there's like five others where we have a suspicion that, you know, around communication issues, or did the patient receive information that they understood, that are there, but there are no disparities, but those are root causes for these disparities, then those would be filter number two, which is, okay, let's pull those out. But then we know that there's a lot of research on trust. I'm just throwing this out. Mistrust, and mistrust is a big issue. But there's nothing in that whole 35 on end-stage renal disease that is related to trust. And that might be some kind of sentinel measure around trust measurement. You know, so I'm trying to kind of walk through these three buckets that, you know, the new measure development is something around trust, nothing there. You know, some that are obvious disparities, those are takers. And then there's a couple that, hey, there's no disparities yet, but there's enough evidence to suggest that these are communication sensitive, disparity sensitive. So.
Except now where Joe's coming from is at MGH, they developed a what they call a sentinel measure around pain management, right? So there was no vetted measurement. Now we have this what we're calling a sentinel measure at MGH, which is around pain management. That terminology doesn't apply to NQF, because once you have that, if you have that as a measure, it's no longer exploratory. It's no longer, you know, it's one of your measures. So I think that's where, you know, we have to make that distinction also in terms of what an individual provider, you know, that's forward-thinking like MGH might be versus, you know, this is a national body that will have vetted approved quality measures. So then this sentinel measure no longer is sentinel. It becomes one of the measures. It's more like the RFA process.
Flags up. Okay, we're ready for the next section then. Did we vote?
I don't think we need to vote on this one. I think we kind of we got.
They got it.
We got the message.
So, what we'd like to do is, as I said before, the new 2:00. We'll start the methodological approaches to disparities measurement. That's section 4. And since there are 9 sections here, we've got about 10 minutes each.
What we're really looking for here is MGH providing some discrete recommendations, you know,
for instance, around stratification, how you should proceed in terms of a reference point, et cetera. This is the second page of your...
Second, it's on page 8 of your agenda.
Page 3.
I'm sorry, I've got page 8 up here. Page 3, sorry, page 3 of your agenda.
Page 3 of your agenda. So these are the kinds of principles that we're looking for the group to recommend.
And so you'll see that each of these have questions attached to them. So we can just, shall we start off down the, unless there are some procedural points, I can't believe there'd be any procedural points in this group.
There's also a table in the full report on page 46. Just so everyone has all of their
references. No, I just think there might be a typo. Shouldn't it be advantage group, not disadvantage? For the first.
Historically advantaged group.
Advantage
should the reference
group.
Point be the historically advantaged group?
Not disadvantaged.
Not the disadvantaged. That's right.
Okay.
So the floor is open for discussion. Let's see if we can go down these point by point for the time being. Francis, you want to start us off?
Again, a very simple or simplistic question, but is that entirely clear to everybody, the historically advantaged group?
Don't you folks define advantaged within the paper? Or you just kind of naturally assume that everybody knows what advantaged is? But you use Paul Braverman. Paul Braverman's
Order, and I just thought that was, she did a really good article a few years back on defining what disparities are, and I think, you know, to this day, there are still many well-respected bodies that are taking, you know, the largest group or the best possible group or benchmark and so on, and I think these are all, you know, relatively valid choices, but it just seemed to us that if you're really talking about equity and disparities reduction, that, you know, there are too many instances where you get unexpected results, and what you're really interested in is in comparing the minority historically disadvantaged population against the advantaged population. And I mean, and to put a label on it, it's usually the white non-Hispanic group that gets chosen for that. In terms of race and ethnicity, and I think that was in our thinking, but really based on Paula Braverman's article.
Won't that have? It seems to me that there would have regional implications, though, for example, or circumstantial implications. To just, you know, like if you're in Appalachia, you know, the white population would be kind of a that would be a confusing reference point for advantaged group. You know, so I'm just wondering whether that would require, while Paula Braverman's overall approach might be valuable, there might need to be some further language refinement to that beyond just simply an overall statement about the white population generally.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's where some of the social disparities, the social determinants come into play, socioeconomic status that people mentioned earlier. But we were focusing on the racial ethnic issue.
Comments? Sean?
Do you know how they do it in AHRQ reports? And would the reason, what about they're doing whatever?
Ernie's right there. Ask Ernie.
Yeah, I think I do. So we do it more. We just compare it all to whites or non-Hispanic whites, or, you know, high income or high education. So it's fixed across all of our comparisons. And I didn't know, it wasn't clear to me if that was meant to be true here too, or if this was going to vary from measure to measure.
No, I think we basically would follow that recommendation. And that would contrast with, the other example I gave in here, but I think it was a CDC example where, you know, they used a, in their disparities index, their summary statistic, they always took the best performing group. And that's a real contrast, you know, in terms of what we're saying. And it should be recognized as a contrast. But I would think that we would go with in terms of SES, we'd go with the highest income. In terms of race ethnicity, we'd go with the white non-Hispanics as the reference group. With the understanding that in certain parts of the country, there may be some granularity that might be more appropriate.
Francis?
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, would it be of benefit to align with what has been done at AHRQ so that it just makes that clear, with the caveats that Dennis brought up about the local issues and, you know, that need to be taken into account, but just so that, because I'm just concerned that historically advantaged group from a measurement point of view may be a little ambiguous to some people, or it's not entirely clear, whereas what Ernest mentioned just before seems to be a lot clearer.
And maybe actually listening to the discussion, that could become one of our tenets, that we use standardized things rather than new ones, because it tends to probably unnecessarily complicate the issue.
Other comments on this